Again, Shabbat Shalom. Welcome to everybody on YouTube and Facebook. And I know you didn't hear the music, but that's such an awesome song. And because of his name, capital N, and because his name is Yeshua, which means salvation, we're going to see, I hope, in this talk, some of the things that result from that. And because we're getting into the holy days, the fall feasts, it's kind of nice to know where all of that was pointing to, where all these things were going toward. Because, you know, in John 5:39, he says, all the scriptures testify of me. Not some of them, not a verse here and there. This one, not so much. He says, all the scriptures testify of me. And all the feast days testify of him. And all of Torah testifies of him. And all the prophets testify of him. And one of the things that we're going to see, there's so many examples, I had to condense some. But unlike what I usually do, this is going to be putting like four different passages together that kind of have the same theme. And it's about Gentiles coming into the kingdom. Radical, radical idea. Unclean Gentiles that were called dogs by the people. Middle Easterners hate dogs. I know all y'all probably love dogs, but Jews and Arabs hate dogs. They see dogs as dirty scavengers. I mean, not so much now. I'm sure there's a lot of pet dogs. But they're not dog people. Let's put it that way. So they called the Gentiles dogs. Because they were like not in the community, dirty, totally unclean, no hope of ever being clean, no covenant, no hope of any kind of peace. But Isaiah says in so many passages in his book how that's going to change. We're only going to take one of those passages because, like I say, we're going to try to go through a bunch tonight in a different kind of format, but we may do one, maybe next week, of all the ones just in Isaiah that talk about how Gentiles are going to come. How people who did not know me will know me. People who weren't looking for me will find me. I'm going to whistle to them from the end of the earth saying, here I am, here I am. And that's why we're here. That's why we're here. Not because we're awesome. Not because, you know, we're physically descended from the patriarchs. You know, our ancestors were pagans, worshiping stones and pieces of wood and sun and stars, you know, all of that. But we heard the call, here I am, here I am. So Isaiah 56, starting at 6. Also, the sons of the foreigner who joined themselves to the Lord, all capital letters, to serve him and to love the name of the Lord, to be his servants, everyone who keeps from defiling the Sabbath and holds fast to my covenant, even them I will bring to my holy mountain and make them joyful in my house of prayer. Their burnt offerings and sacrifices will be acceptable on my altar, for my house shall be called a house of prayer for all nations. Foreigners who join themselves to the Lord. You know, our ancestors were worshiping the moon and the sun and the stars and the wind and the whatever. Foreigners who join themselves to the Lord, love the name of the Lord, and God is very zealous for his name because his name contains all of his nature, all of his characteristics, all of his power is all in his name. That's why if you use the name of the Lord in vain, you will not escape punishment. It says in the commandments, right? It says they're not going to escape judgment if you do that because his name is so holy. And you're going to be his servants and you're not going to defile the covenant. Then even those people, even the people who are not from Abraham, even the people who are uncircumcised, even the people who are doing all this other stuff, are going to come to my holy mountain. Now, keep in mind what the prerequisites of that word. They can't just show up. They have to understand who God is. They have to be his, they want to be his servants. They want to understand his name. They want to keep his covenant, especially the Sabbath. When you look through Torah, and the prophets too, but when you look through Torah and see how much emphasis is on the Sabbath, it's really quite remarkable. The Sabbath is mentioned so many times that you have to keep the Sabbath, you have to keep the Sabbath, you have to keep the Sabbath. Even if you don't do anything else, you have to keep the Sabbath. In fact, to this very day, the term that Jews have for an observant Jew is, oh, he keeps the Sabbath. I can't remember exactly what it is. You guys probably know, but it's not Somer Shabbat. All right, anyway, keeps the Sabbath. That's kind of the minimum requirement to say that you're a Jew. You keep the Sabbath. If you don't keep the Sabbath, well, you're no better than those Gentile dogs. Oh, come on, that was funny. So their sacrifices are going to be acceptable. They're going to be able to come into the house of prayer. You know, could any of our ancestors have just gone strolling into the temple in Jesus' time and say, I thought I'd come in and see what y'all are up to. You guys worship on Saturday. Today's Saturday. I just want to come over and see what's going on. You would have been escorted out to the court of the Gentiles. Say, don't you move from here. Because you couldn't just go wandering in. It was for the covenant people. So he says, they're going to be included. So people from the outside are going to be welcomed. You know, when the people left Egypt, it says a mixed multitude went with them. It wasn't just the Hebrews. There were some Egyptians that went with them. There were probably people who the Egyptians, other people the Egyptians had as slaves, who went with them. It was a mixed multitude. And they followed Moses and the people out and presumably went into the wilderness with them and presumably stayed in the wilderness with them. We don't really hear the details of that, but if they were over 20, they probably got into the land. I mean, under 20, they probably got into the land. Over 20, their carcasses dropped in the desert, as it says in Numbers. So there was a multitude from Egypt. They have a place in this kind of, what do you want to call it, primitive church? Not primitive, but it's the church before Messiah. And these foreigners who are worshiping multiple gods have a place with the people if they decide to go with them, if they understand that the God of Israel is the true God, if they want to serve him, if they want to go where the chosen people are going. Now, the writer to the Hebrews says they were wandering in the wilderness heading to the promised land. We're heading through our wilderness, heading for the ultimate promised land, which, of course, is heaven. So foreigners joined up with them and have a place. Now, this was long before Isaiah, but this is a precedent. So if they join themselves to the Lord, they forsake their gods. Part of the problem with the Samaritans was that they had the God of Israel, they had the Torah, but they recognize, like, well, some of these other people in different places have their own gods, and, you know, that's not necessarily bad. You know, maybe there is a God over there who's, you know, we have our God, but maybe they have. No, you have to forsake the other gods, and you have to serve him. You don't serve pretend gods. You know, you remember in the book of Isaiah where Isaiah says, you know, somebody goes out into the forest and they cut down a tree, and half of it they use to warm themselves and cook their food. And the other half they fashion into an image. And then they nail it to a table. Then they worship it and say, this is a god. Where, you know, a couple hours ago, it was a tree. So no more pretend gods. If you're going to do pretend gods, you can't come into my house. If we mix the gospel of Messiah with all kind of weird superstitions and weird idols that we're involved with in our head or in our lives, we're in the same boat. You don't mix gods together. If your life, if your career, if your house, if your car, if your whatever is more important to you than God, you're serving pretend gods that in the end have absolutely no value. You know, we see in the Gospels and in Paul's writings that some of these Romans, some of these Greeks, you know, they finally realize, hey, you know what? We have all these hundreds of gods and they're all useless. We're going to follow the God you guys have because this seems pretty cool. So you don't have pretend gods. So if you forsake your gods, if you come to his name, if you want to serve him, you come into the kingdom. So you can probably see where this is heading. So they have to join themselves to the Lord. You don't just say, you know what, on Sunday mornings I go, or Saturday mornings I go, and, you know, I'm hoping it's going to be about 45 minutes. I mean, if it's 55 minutes, okay. But if it crosses the 1 hour mark and the guy's done finally and it's been an hour and 7 minutes, I'm going to look for another place to go next week because that's just ridiculous. Yeah, there's a lot of people like that. And when you tell them, you know, we like to go to services the last 2 or 3 or 4 hours, they go, oh, what would you mean? But well, what would you rather be doing? So you forsake that, you serve him, and you join yourself to him. Then you can come. Now, in Isaiah's time, this was tough going because you had the law. So if somebody came and said, I want to join you guys. I want to be a Jew like you guys are. Well, there were some issues involved. First, circumcision for the man. Oh, I didn't realize that was going to come up. Here's all the laws. Oh, these are way more laws than we have. But as you can probably know where we're going with this, when we get to the time of Messiah, as we're going to see, it changes. So you have to love his name because his name is his identity. In Ezekiel 39:25, he says, I'm zealous for my name. If you blaspheme his name, it's just like insulting him to his face. Even though you can't see him here, if you blaspheme his name, it's a direct attack because his name is holy and he's zealous for his name. Keep the Sabbath. Follow the commandments. You know, 1 John, especially in chapters 3 and chapter 5, really lay out a thing like, well, you know, if you're going to follow, you can't just be sinning all the time. You know, if you sin, you're of the devil. If you're following Christ, you're not supposed to be sinning. Well, of course, we know that. But, you know, it kind of reminds me of modern Christian movements where, oh, it doesn't matter what you do. You know, you got saved when you were 12 and now you're 78 and, you know, you killed somebody. Don't worry about it. You know, it's all cool. It's all cool. But, you know, you follow his commandments. You have to be in the covenant. And again, I'll say, in Isaiah's time, this was much more difficult to be in that covenant than it is for us to be in our covenant that we're living in. That's why the gospel is good news. If the gospel is law, 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 oops, you just blew it, bub, sorry. What do you mean I blew it? Oh, you didn't do so well on this one. Law, 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 you blew this one. That's not good news. Because the law condemns you. You either keep the law or you don't. Right? It's a zero or a one. Grace is different than that. We're going to see. So the new covenant is good news. You know, Martin Luther said, we're at the same time sinners and saints. Which, you know, depending how you look at it, it makes sense because we're sinners. Just because we come to Yeshua doesn't mean, oh, we're never going to sin again. We're still going to sin, but it's different than it was before. Because now we're not slaves to sin. Now when we sin, we say, oh, shouldn't have done that. Oh, I want to serve you. I don't want to do this. Whereas if you're a card-carrying, unrepentant sinner, you say, eh, I'm going to do whatever I feel like doing. So you keep the covenant. And he is going to bring them to his holy mountain. He's going to bring them. You know, we always had a joke at home that when I got involved in messianic ministry 25 years ago, whatever it was now, it was pretty close to the beginning of it, of my transitioning. Ooh, that's not a good word to use today. But of my faith experience, I should say. Joan used to always say, I'll bet one of your ancestors was a Roman soldier in the land, and he brought an Israeli woman home with him, either as a slave or his wife, and they became your ancestors. And we used to laugh about it. And then when I did my DNA and found out I had 3% Jewish DNA, I thought, well, maybe it's true. Oh, come on, that's a little bit funny. So, you know, he's going to bring them to his holy mountain. They're not going to just show up. Foreigners. You know, in the book of Acts, I can't remember the chapter, the Pharisees berate Paul because he brought Titus to the temple and said he defiled the temple because not only is he a Gentile, he's uncircumcised. Why did you bring him here? Paul says, dude, relax. You guys need to like cool it. So he brings them to the mountain. He leads them there. You know, my sheep know my name, know my voice. And when they hear me, they follow. I lead them out of the sheepfold. You know, if the good shepherd goes in there with the, what is that, a crook that shepherds carry? You know, and you beat the sheep with it and say, come on, you guys. Or you yell and scream at the sheep. But he says, my sheep know my voice and they follow me. We know his voice. The guy sitting over there across the street maybe knows his voice, maybe doesn't know his voice. We know his voice and we follow. We follow the shepherd. He shows them the way. He shows them how to get to his holy mountain, leads them there. So the bottom line of this is the prayers of the Gentiles are just as acceptable as those of the Jews. Fast forward to the year, I don't know, 33, let's say. As Gentiles start to come in to the body, into the church, there's not a Jewish body and a Gentile body. There's one body of Messiah. There's one body of Christ. He doesn't say, well, you know, for the Jews, I got a little bit of a different thing here. And for you Gentiles, we got a little bit of a different thing here. You know, there's people that say, oh, you don't have to evangelize the Jews. They have their own covenant. Well, Paul doesn't agree with that. Everybody's saved by what happened at the cross, not by your heredity. So the prayers of the Gentiles are just as acceptable in the new covenant. But he says, even here, they can come to my mountain. Their prayers will be acceptable if they did those things that he mentioned. Even though they're not children of Abraham, they're accepted as spiritual children of Abraham. Abraham's not our father. Well, 3% of me. But Abraham's not our father, right? I'm also 12% Armenian. And I didn't know that till I did my DNA. But the funny thing is I have a good friend who's an Armenian Orthodox priest. Whenever he tells me something that's going on or something exciting going on at his church or something that's awesome, I say, wow, 12% of me is really excited. Oh, come on. That's kind of funny. So we're adopted as we're spiritual children. And it says they're going to be joyful. All the nations are going to be joyful. There's nothing joyful about worshiping Venus and worshiping Zeus. In fact, in Acts 17 at the Areopagus in Athens, Paul says, you know, God will put up with this for a long time, but he's not going to put up with it much longer. There's going to be a time where your guys are going to be judged for what you're doing. You're worshiping Zeus? Okay. Don't say I didn't tell you the gospel. You know, you tell people the gospel, whether you're at Panera's or Starbucks or Denny's or wherever you are, and somebody says, oh, I don't believe any of that crap. I don't want to even hear that. Just shut up and don't. Okay, well, you can't say I didn't tell you. Right? We've all experienced that kind of aggressive rejection. You know, like, I don't want to hear about that. That's one thing. But hey, listen, I don't believe any of that. So just shut up. And I don't want. So all nations are going to be able to come to this. Psalm 67. Now, the other passage is written 700 years before Yeshua. This is written about 900 and some years before Yeshua. Let the peoples praise you, O God. Let all the peoples praise you. Oh, let the nations be glad and sing for joy. For you shall judge the people righteously and govern the nation. Now, when you read the Hebrew text of this, what do you think the word that we translate as peoples is? Goyim. So let the Goyim praise you. Wait a minute. Those are disgusting, dirty dogs. They have their own gods and let them rot over there. We got the true God here. We got all the stuff here. But David writes, let the Goyim praise you. Let all the Goyim praise you. Let the Goyim be glad and sing. Because you're going to govern them. Here we are, a bunch of Goyim. We're happy and joyful and we're singing. I know you didn't hear the music online, but there's reason for that we won't get into. But he's going to govern the Goyim on earth. You know, first chapter of Colossians, Paul says, not only does all the fullness of the Godhead dwell in Jesus of Nazareth, but he holds the whole universe together. And everything was created by him, through him, and for him. Nothing exists that wasn't created by him, visible and invisible. Thrones and dominions and powers, everything is created by him, through him, and for him. So guess what, all you Goyim? Someday you're going to realize that. Here we are, Goyim. We're praising him. We're singing. We're glad. We're joyful. 900 and some years before Messiah is born. So Gentiles are going to praise him because they're going to see the truth and ultimately going to understand salvation. Understand salvation. In one debate I had with an ultra-Orthodox rabbi at the Western Wall, I said to him, as a Gentile, how can I have salvation? He said, you can't. I said, wow, that's pretty bleak. He goes, well, there's one way you can do it, keep the Torah. I said, you don't keep the Torah. He goes, yes, I do. I go, no, you don't. I go, you don't keep the Torah. I said, do you have a temple up there where you can make sacrifices? Well, of course not. Well, then you're not keeping Torah. How are you atoning for your sin? I can tell you how I'm atoning for my sin. That didn't go well, but anyway. But ultimately, the Gentiles are going to understand salvation. And Romans 11, of course. For I speak to you Gentiles, inasmuch as I am an apostle to the Gentiles, I magnify my ministry. If by any means I may provoke to jealousy those who are my flesh and save some of them. This doesn't sound like Paul says, hey, as long they got their own covenant. As long as they keep their own covenant, they're going to be saved. Paul says, hey, I want to magnify my ministry. I want to provoke them to jealousy so that some of them can be saved. For if they're being cast away as reconciling of the world, that's us, what will their acceptance be but life from the dead? If Gentiles came to faith to make Israel jealous, what's going to happen in the world when they come to Yeshua. It's going to be unbelievable. I hope it's tomorrow, but it's going to be unbelievable because in this chapter, he talks about the olive tree and then he says all Israel will be saved. And people have debated how's that going to happen, but it sounds like it's going to be one sudden event and all Israel is going to be saved. Read Zechariah 12:10 for your homework. So Gentiles come to faith to make Israel jealous. Israel's failing was salvation for the Gentiles. And the world is reconciled. The world is reconciled, not just Israel, not people living within 100 miles of Capernaum, not people living within 20 miles of Jerusalem. The world is reconciled because whoever fears him is acceptable. Whoever forsakes their false gods, whoever attaches themselves to the true God, to his name, capital N, and wants to serve him is acceptable. Yes, no? But it can't just be for Gentiles. Just like in the first century, you could have argued, well, this can't just be for Jews. How can you have Messiah do all this stuff just for this little group of people? We can look at it and say, well, it can't just be for Gentiles. You know, there's a group of Messianic Jews. I don't know if you guys have heard of Toward Jerusalem Council 2. There's a lot of Messianic rabbis that are involved in this movement to have like a worldwide council of Christians to talk about Jewish believers. And the guy who started it said something really cool. And he said, in the first council, which was Acts 15 in Jerusalem, the Jews got together to decide what were they going to do with these Gentiles who were coming to Jesus. Now we need a council to say, what are we going to do with these Jews that are coming to Jesus? So the whole thing has gone full circle, which is kind of cute. So it can't just be for Gentiles, it's for all people. And Paul says, I'm an instrument in that. I'm an apostle to the Gentiles. I'm not the Pharisee anymore. I'm not counting all the things anymore. I'm an apostle to the Gentiles. I want Israel to be saved. I would almost want to lose my salvation to have them saved, my countrymen, my brethren in the flesh. He would almost, he doesn't say he would want to, he said he could almost not be saved to save them. So what would their acceptance be? Life from the dead. And it points back to Isaiah 56, full circle. Come to the house of prayer, come to the mountain. I'm going to accept their prayers. I'm going to accept their sacrifice. Because now, when they do these things, they're acceptable. Before, they were not acceptable. For if you were cut out of the olive tree, which is wild by nature, and were grafted, contrary to nature, into a cultivated olive tree, how much more will these who are natural branches be grafted into their own olive tree? So in other words, what he's saying here is, Israel's the olive tree. The ones who reject Jesus and go into rabbinical Judaism, those branches are removed. We're from the wild olive tree. Bad fruit, no fruit, bad fruit, sour fruit, not growing very well. We get grafted into the true tree. And he says, the roots nourish us. The roots, being Judaism, nourish us. See, the church is like Esther. She forgot that she's Jewish. You can go home and think about that. The church forgot she was Jewish, which has led to a lot of issues. But Paul says, if they were natural branches to begin with, how much easier it's going to be to graft them back in? So when you have Jewish believers, Jews who come to faith in Yeshua, boom, easily grafted back into the tree. Now, Matthew 15. This is a good one. This will be the end. This is a good one. I'm sure you've read this a million times. And for those of you that know history, those of you that know the Bible, those of you that know all the distinctions I just said about covenant people, non-covenant people, Then Yeshua went out from there and departed to the region of Tyre and Sidon. And behold, a woman of Canaan came from that region and cried out to him, saying, "Have mercy on me, O Lord, son of David. Son of David. My daughter is severely demon-possessed." In Mark's gospel, she's called the Syrophoenician woman. Here she's called a Canaanite woman. Well, however you slice it, she's not a Jew. She's from a Gentile pagan area. She cries out to Jesus. She cries out to him. She doesn't say, excuse me, can I just run something by you real quick? She cries out to him and says, first of all, calls him Lord. This is not all capitals. This is Adonai. Calls him Adonai. Calls him Lord. Son of David. This is a Canaanite, Gentile, pagan woman. Calls him the son of David. What does that mean? You're the Messiah. You're the Messiah. I know the Jews are waiting for a Messiah, and I know you're him. You're he. Sorry. Son of David. Just like the blind guy who yells, "Son of David, have mercy on me." This burned the Pharisees when someone called him Son of David, when someone called him Son of Man, which was probably the most common title he used. It really burned them because that's from the book of Daniel. And they knew what he was saying. We don't because we don't know scripture. They knew what he was saying. "Have mercy on me, Son of David. My daughter's demon possessed." But he answered her not a word. Ignored her. And his disciples came and urged him, saying, "Send her away, for she cries out after us." What is this Gentile woman doing here? What is this dog doing here? Get her out of here. We're not here for this kind of thing. Jesus is quiet. But he answered and said, "I was not sent except to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." Then she came and worshiped him, saying, "Lord, help me." Worshiped him. Would a Jewish man submit to worship of any kind? Never in a million years. When Cornelius falls down in front of Peter, Peter says, "Get up, don't do that." John falls down before an angel, probably a Jewish angel, who picks him up and says, "Don't do that, I'm a creature just like you." Bowing down to a man and worshiping is gross idolatry from a Jewish point of view. Well, from any point of view. Gross idolatry. And she worships him and says, "Lord, help me." Now, she's not just saying, "I heard you're a good teacher and I know you're a really good philosopher and people are talking about you and I know that you healed somebody over there. Can we go see my daughter?" No, she worships him and says, "Help me." And calls him Lord for the second time. But he answered and said, "It is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the little dogs." And she said, "Yes, Lord, yet even the little dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table." This is tough. This is Jesus, kind-hearted, merciful, gracious, full of love for everyone, who first doesn't talk to her and then says, "Hey, I came for the house of Israel and I can't take the bread for the children and give it to the dogs, the little dogs." So he's basically calling her a dog. That's the mindset of the first century. She says, "Even the dogs get the crumbs that fall from the table," after worshiping him. Then Jesus answered and said to her, "O woman, great is your faith." Great is your faith. Not, "You're so awesome. How come you don't renounce your, how come you haven't been to the temple? How come your husband's not circumcised? How come you didn't do this? How come you didn't do that? Why are you wearing clothes that have three different kind of cloth on them? It's supposed to be all one kind of cloth. What do you eat? I bet you don't eat right. I bet you eat forbidden stuff. Why should I even deal with this? He says, no, great is your faith. Let it be to you as you desire. And her daughter was healed from that very hour. He praises her faith, not how awesome she is, not how religious she is, not where she's from, not, oh, I heard you have a Jewish friend. Okay, I'll heal your daughter, but talk to your friend because you really need to come and be one of us. No, he praises her faith, a Gentile woman. So this is a gleam of light that's coming to the Gentiles. Remember, Isaiah said he's going to be a light to the nations. You know, that's always read at Christmas time during Advent. He's going to be a light to the nations. When he's 40 days old, Simeon picks up little baby Jesus, who's 40 days old, and says, this baby is the glory of Israel and a light to the Gentiles. You know, why is this old man talking about Gentiles in the temple? They were sick to death of Gentiles. They were surrounded by them. And now they had the Romans there. And this baby's going to be the light to the Gentiles. Here he's light to a Gentile woman. The woman at the well, she's kind of a half-breed Gentile. She got some light too, but this is the first glimmer. She calls him Son of David, calls him Lord. She requests mercy. Short speech, doesn't go on and on and on about her problems. Doesn't whine that she can't afford her medications. Doesn't whine that she hasn't been doing this, she hasn't been doing that. She hasn't been to the Canaanite temple for a while. I go for bingo, but I don't usually go for the thing. No, she makes a short speech, humble speech, a faithful speech, and a modest speech. Son of David, you can help my daughter. I don't care what you do to me, but you can help my daughter. She has faith that he can help her, not based on her merit. She doesn't say, you know what, I'm mayor of the town. You know what, I'm on the city council. You know what, I'm like the most important Canaanite woman you've ever seen. You know what, I'm pretty cool. I've never killed anybody. Not based on her merit. Knows that he can help. Knows that he has the power. And she perseveres. He ignores her. She says again. He says something kind of insulting. She answers back. She's persistent. Like the parable of the woman who keeps talking to the judge and asking the judge to finally says, okay, I give in. So she perseveres and she comes with faith that he can help her. He can deliver her. He can deliver her daughter. Gentile woman, lots of gods, not in the right genetic group. Probably descended from Abraham, but in this case, it doesn't count. He ignores her, Gentile. Does he ignore her because she's a Gentile? Is it to try her faith to see what she's going to do? Maybe. Is he considering her request? I don't know. What should I do? Should I heal her daughter? I don't know. All right, maybe. So she's a lost sheep, but not of the house of Israel. It says, I came for the lost sheep of Israel. She's a lost sheep, all right. We all are. But we're not from the house of Israel either. He came for the lost sheep. And Paul in Romans 15:8 says, Yeshua's the minister of the circumcision. In other words, he's from the people. Remember, two reasons they're chosen people. Number one, God reveals himself. Number two, physical body for Messiah. He wasn't Swedish, despite what most church nativity scenes look like. And he wasn't Chinese. And he probably didn't have curly blonde hair and big blue eyes, but that's another story. And the partition, of Ephesians 2, 14 and 15 hasn't been torn down yet because he hasn't been sacrificed yet. The cross hasn't happened yet. Resurrection hasn't happened yet. There's still a separation. What does this passage say? Yeshua in his own flesh broke down the partition between the two, making one new man. Doesn't say making a Jewish man and a Gentile man. Doesn't say making a church over here and a messianic synagogue over here. Making one new man. So that hasn't happened yet. She's still a Gentile. He's still a Jew. He says the bread is for the children, not the dogs. You dogs don't get the same stuff that the children do. The Greek means little dogs, as it says in there. They're not in covenant. There's no hope. I'm here for Israel, not for y'all. So she perseveres. She's willing to have just the crumbs. She goes, I'll take the crumbs. She doesn't go there and say, hey, you know what? I want to be a big shot in this church. I want to sit in the front, and I want to wear really cool clothes. And I want the pastor to say, oh, look who's here. I want the rabbi to say, oh, look who's here. Wow, we're so honored that you're here today. Susie Sunshine, we're so happy that you're here. No, she's willing to take the crumbs that fall from the table. She'd rather have a little bit of Jesus than nothing. We want him to give us a job and a bonus and an awesome house and a great car and health. Oh, yeah, boy, anything, everything. You know, I never want to be sick on one day. Yep, I don't want crumbs. I want to be in the big arena with the guy who puts his arm up. We won't mention any names. Says, you use that power you have. Well, the Bible says you have no power. The Bible says you're supposed to pick up your cross and follow him. So she's willing to have the crumbs. The children can have the bread. I'm not going to take the children's bread. I just want the crumbs. Even that little bit will help me. If you've ever studied the Song of Songs, it's kind of like this, where the groom says, oh, you know, I just want you to look at me. I just glance at me. I want you to just glance at me. You know, okay, I'll do that. You know, I don't want to make full commitment. I don't want to go out and do all the stuff you're doing. I just want to look at you once in a while. And he says, okay. We'll just take a little bit. I'll just take the crumbs. The children can have the bread. You know, whatever the children leave behind, I'll eat. I won't interfere with their blessing. She knows she doesn't deserve it. But she'll take the crumbs because she's going to go up the mountain to the house of prayer for all nations. She's going to come. She forsook. I don't like that word. Forsake. That doesn't sound good either. She forsook whatever gods the Canaanites had, Baal and all that group. And I highly recommend you read Jonathan Cahn's book, Return of the Gods. Has anybody read that? It's amazing. She's forsaken those gods and she's gone to the Son of David and says, just give me the crumbs. I want my daughter to be all right. Strong, active, lively faith. And her faith expects it. And she admits that he's the master and it's his table. The dogs get the crumbs that fall from the master table. You're the master. It's your table. I'll take the crumbs, just like the dogs. So he commends her faith. Everything here is a product of her faith. And these hindrances that came along, even what he says to her, increase her faith. She doesn't say, oh, man, I guess I asked the wrong guy. Even the hindrances increase your faith because she knows that even with the crumbs, he's sufficient to help her. Her pagan priest can't help her, but this is the Son of David. He can help her. So forsake your gods, come into the covenant. I'll lead you up to the house of prayer. Your faith will make Israel jealous. You'll be grafted into the olive tree. And a Gentile woman who comes to faith, he says, how great is your faith? Never said that to the Pharisees. Never recorded one time that he said anything like that to the religious leaders. But this Gentile woman, he said, how great is your faith? And as Paul says, it's faith from beginning to end. Woo! So that's Gentile talk, maybe number one. Who knows? Before we get to the Fourth Feast.